Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, all good things must come to an end. The Guardians' win streak snapped at five games last night, but not before they put on a show, falling behind 5-0 in the first inning. Logan Allen allowed the first, seven batters to reach base, and five or six batters to reach base and
first,
score.
First five, Joe.
But then, locked it in for the next three innings and gave the Guardians a chance. The offense came back. Josh Naylor hit a two-run home run. They tied the game at five, but ultimately Scott Barlow gave up two runs in the eighth inning. They wind up losing for the first time at home, and they give the Chicago White Sox their first road victory of the year. What'd you take away from last night's game, just outside of an uncharacteristic performance by Logan Allen early?
Yeah, Logan Allen had really looked good the first two starts of the season, Joe. He had seemed to conquer those first inning problems that gave him some problems last year, but they kind of resurfaced last night. Like you said, he gives up, the big first inning, first five guys get on base. But he reeled it in. And, gave them he pitched into the fourth, through the fourth, and kind of held the White Sox right there. And you got to give credit to the offense for showing some grit and coming back and making a game of it. We all wondered just how much firepower this offense has and where its ability to come back from a big deficit was, and they kind of proved that given a chance, they can overcome a deficit and at least make a game of it.
Yeah, and I think part of the important thing there was they fell down by five. Naylor hits the home run, and then the dugout pretty much just turns into a positive energy source, and Hedges stomping up and down the dugout telling guys, "We're winning this game, we're winning this game," and they ultimately do come back and tie it and make it a new ball game, erase that deficit. That's even though it was a loss, it's something you can take positives out of because of the way they kept going. Very much reminded me of some of the teams of the great runs with Tito, where you really can't count them out if they keep playing through the 27th out. This team has a lot of good energy and a lot of the right attitude and approach to even when you're down in that. And Stephen Vogt said after the game, he was very proud of the way that they responded. And really that's the only thing you can say in that situation, because ultimately you didn't win. Any concern about Scott Barlow? He came out there, really weird situation with, I think it was Corey Lee, had, with one out, had a ground ball break his bat, and the barrel of the bat and the ball basically came flying at Barlow at the same time. Vogt said he had never seen anything like that before. Watching it on replay, it was almost like tunneling when the pitcher throws a fastball and then his changeup or his curve from the same arm slot, and the ball looks like it's coming from the same spot. The bat and the ball were tunneling towards Barlow at the same time, and You know, you can't expect him to make a play like that. If you're choosing between getting hit by a bat or, you know, fielding a ground ball, you're pretty much always going to choose to not get hit by the bat.
Yeah, I think the bat and the ball went through his legs, between his legs. It looked like, you know, watching the game on TV. And, you know, the bat was like blocking for the ball. The bat was in front of the ball. So, yeah, it was a tough play. You know, I think we're going to see these kind of innings from Barlow, Joe. Not you know, I'm not talking about broken bats. But, you know, this is like we've talked about before. He kind of does the late innings different. He's not throwing 95, 96, 97 miles an hour. He's a breaking ball pitcher. He's going to put people on base. He's going to, you know, walk the razor's edge. And, you know, he had done a nice job of it before last night. And last night the odds went against him. But, you know, they seem to be they keep running him out there in the eighth inning. And he's got the track record. So we'll have to see how the season unfolds with him.
Yeah, the top of the lineup in terms of you were asking where that offense would come from. The first four hitters, 8 for 17 in the game. The bottom five hitters, 1 for 21 at the plate. So the offense very top heavy in that regard. Stephen Kwan, another multi hit game. He's got what? 6 or 7 multi-hit games through the first 11. I think 7 multi-hit games through the first 11. At the end of the night, he was tied with Shohei Ohtani with 20 hits for the most in Major League Baseball. It's the most hits by a Cleveland batter through 11 games since Manny Ramirez had 21 in 1999. So, you know, pretty good there. Jose Ramirez, a 3-hit game. Jose Ramirez since 2017 has 76 3-hit games, and that's the third most in baseball behind Whit Merrifield with 78 and Jose Altuve, who has 92. So, you know, you think of Jose Ramirez in that regard. He didn't really have a lot of 3-hit games last year, except for the one where all three of them went, left the ballpark against the Red Sox. But Ramirez, 3 for 5, an RBI, 2 runs scored. So the top of the order there, doing the job, producing the runs, and, you know, playing like they need to play in order for the Guardians to be successful.
Yeah. And they have to get some more production from, the bottom part of the lineup, Joe, obviously. And they have for, you know, most part for the, you know, the first 11 games of the season, the first 10 games of the season, they've been pretty well rounded offense. So that we'll chalk that up for just one of the nights, one of those nights in this defeat. But yeah, the top of the order looked really good. You know, it was good to see Naylor hit the 2-run homer right away in the bottom of the first to, you know, let the White Sox know that it wasn't going to be a runaway. And so far, Joe, I think I've been encouraged by the offense, and it's been better than I expected.
Yeah, it has been better than expected. I think the biggest turning point in the ball game, bottom of the seventh, the Guardians get you know, 2 runners on. The go ahead run is at second base in Jose Ramirez with just 1 out, and Tyler Freeman and Will Brennan, back to back strikeouts against Steven Wilson. That was pretty much the biggest, you know, point of the game right there, because Cleveland could have pushed that run across and, you know, things might have looked different coming out of the bullpen. But that was, you know, an example of the productivity. They had to get one of those runs in, and it didn't happen. So, you know, big point in the game there. Hoynsey, as far as today goes, Tanner Bibee going against Eric Fetty. Should be an interesting pitching matchup in tonight's ballgame.
Yeah, Bibee coming off of a decent start, Joe. They can use this game. It would really be helpful to win this game, to win the series. You know, it would be their fourth straight series win with the Yankees coming to town, and the Yankees are playing very, very well. So I think it would be nice to, you know, kind of store a win away, and, you know, like a squirrel storing those acorns away.
All right. I want to remind our listeners, Guardian Subtext is the best way to get updates throughout the day, throughout each game. When we arrive at the ballpark, we're constantly sending messages, updates with our pregame meetings with the players and coaches. Guardian Subtext is $3.99 a month to subscribe, and you get messages sent directly to your phone. You can skip social media, don't have to go there. You can get all your information personalized. Go to Cleveland Guardians and go to cleveland.com/subtext to subscribe, or send a text message to 216-208-4346. Hoynsie, we wanted to talk today with all the talk, and it's only going to continue throughout the season because I'm sure more injuries are coming, more news is going to break on pitchers being sidelined. It seems like every day we're adding, you know, a name or two to the list. Significant here in Cleveland because Shane Bieber is now on the list of guys who are having season-ending elbow surgery, reconstructive surgery, Tommy John surgery. The epidemic is at a fever pitch right now, and you know, all the factors, you ask every player, every manager, they can't claim to have the answers, but you know, there are so many things that go into this. Chasing velocity, the way they grip the ball, the lack of the sticky substances that make them change their grips, and that kind of thing. Just a whole you know, sort of approach to pitching is going to have to change here at some point. But we wanted to talk about just thinking of the sheer number of pitchers that have undergone this surgery. And there are several lists out there that you can see where every, you know, it lists, you know, all the pitchers who have undergone Tommy John surgery and then tried to come back. Or it also has, you know, position players on that list as well. But we wanted to look at some of the top Cleveland pitchers through history who have had the surgery and then come back and performed well in their careers for the Cleveland franchise. And we picked out about five of these guys here, and we're going to go through them. And, you know, some of these names were pretty surprising. I was surprised to find a couple of these guys on the list who I didn't even know even had the surgery.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, you know, you've got to kind of go back in your memory bank, and you know, Tommy John surgery, it's been going on for a long time, and you know, it's been called different things: ligament replacement surgery, reconstructive surgery. But you know, the guys we kind of nail, you know, kind of highlighted. For me, the first guy that jumped out to me was Bert Blylevin, Joe.
Mm-hmm. Blylevin won 111 of his 287 career wins after having surgery in what, 1982 or 83, I believe. And eventually he winds up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and you know, he had this is a guy that pitched forever, 287 wins. You know, bounced around a lot, but, you know, had some significant seasons with Cleveland. You know, he missed the one, you know, I think you were right, Joe. I think he missed the 1984 season, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
80, and came back at the, you know, the next year and really, you know, kind of reestablished himself and, you know, went on to pitch in World Series, I believe with the Twins. And, you know, just and eventually got into the Hall of Fame. So he's the one, he's the guy when I think about a pitcher undergoing Tommy John surgery and coming back and being successful. He's the guy that jumps out at me.
Yeah, especially for Cleveland or in a Cleveland uniform finding that success, because, you know, there have been others who have had the surgery. You think of Justin Verlander, you know, guys who have had the surgery and come back and, you know, been stronger, won Cy Young awards afterwards. So, you know, the blueprint is there. The pathway is there for guys like Shane Bieber and, you know, even Spencer Strider, who's already had the surgery once. You got to think about things like that. So Tom Candiotti is the next guy on the list. And I completely forgotten that Tom Candiotti had the surgery, you know, before he even, you know, broke into the big leagues with Milwaukee.
Yeah, and he had the surgery. I remember talking to Candy, you know, when he played here, and he said he was talking to the doctor before they put him under. He said, "Doc, you think I'll be able to pitch again?" And the doctor, you know, just he wasn't really sure. He wasn't, you know, he did not give him a ringing endorsement. And but he had the surgery, you know, and Candy obviously had to change the way he pitched. Mm-hmm. He was a pretty much a traditional pitcher before he had the surgery, and then he had to start throwing the knuckleball. And, you know, that saved him. That saved his career. And he went on to have a great career as a knuckleball pitcher. He pitched in Cleveland. I think he had two different tours in Cleveland. But his best, the best run of his career was in Cleveland.
Yeah, the peak of his career was in those, mid to late 80s, 90s teams. And like you said, 151 wins is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that's still – pretty significant that he was, and he was able to pitch for as long as he did. Something remarkable about that to think about. Where do you rank Mike Clevinger on this list? He had the surgery before he came to Cleveland, but really sort of made it and broke in with the when he played with the Indians. He went 42-22 with Cleveland, and posted a 1.42 ERA plus in his, time in a Cleveland uniform. Really strong, solid piece of that rotation, for a good 4 or 5 years. And you never even saw any of the effects of the surgery on him. He threw as hard as anybody.
Yeah, he had the surgery when he was with the Angels. I think he was still recovering from the surgery when Cleveland made the trade. It was one of those under the right radar trades. Vinny Pistano, I believe, they sent to the Angels mm-hmm. to get Clevinger. And Mike worked really hard with the pitching coaches in the minor leagues. Ruben Niebla was one of those guys, and kind of put his delivery back together again, and really came up and had a great run with Cleveland. Maybe the best run he's had in the big leagues, Joe. You know, he turned himself into a valuable starting pitcher. I mean, they made that great trade with San Diego and got what, like 12 guys, it seemed like, in mm-hmm. return for Clevinger. And then he went to San Diego and kind of blew out again. But he's back now. He just signed with the White Sox. So, I'm anxious to see, what kind of season Clevinger's going to have.
Yeah, maybe the best part about and Clevinger's biggest value to the franchise was that he did build up and become a top level pitcher that could command that kind of a return in a trade. And you look at it now, they got Austin Hedges the first time. They got Josh Naylor. I believe Joey Cantillo was in that trade. Those are, three guys who are still in the organization right now. And Cal Quantrill had contributed too before he moved on to the Rockies.
And Arias too, and Gabriel
Arias.
Yeah,
Gabriel Arias. So there's three guys on the roster right now who were in that trade. And it's all because Clevinger was so pissed off about the way he was treated in Los Angeles after the surgery. They don't want me anymore. So he came to Cleveland with a chip on his shoulder, and that really drove him after he had the elbow surgery.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. He loved to pitch against the Angels after he came back with Cleveland. Loved to beat them, and he did not hide that. He wore his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we've got two more here on this list that we came up with. Very familiar face, a guy in the clubhouse right now, in fact. And I had completely forgotten about Carlos Carrasco as a guy who had the Tommy John surgery. Had it in 2011, and we're talking about a guy who's fourth on Cleveland's all-time strikeout list, right behind Corey Kluber. A chance that at some point maybe Carrasco could pass Kluber on that list this season if he keeps going. You think about it, Carlos Carrasco, it doesn't really show any signs of anything, any ill effects from that surgery in his career since 2011.
Yeah, I mean, he is, he missed that at least a year, I think, coming mm-hmm. back from that, Joe. But that was early in his career. He came back, and he's turned himself into, really a solid big league starting pitcher. You know, he's back in Cleveland for his second tour. He's in the rotation, and he's, you know, I think, you know, I think if Shane Bieber is looking for an example of what, you know, what he could be, all he has to do is look at, you know, Carrasco and at Carlos and see what he's done. And, you know, there is hope for this, for Shane coming out of this surgery.
As far as relievers go, we did put one on this list. And I, again, he's another one you just totally forget who had had the surgery. But Bob Wickman had the surgery in 2003, in right in the middle of his tenure with Cleveland. But then came back. He was back in 04, and he was an all-star in 2005. In 2005, he made 64 appearances. He led the league with 45 saves. He was an all-star, and he even got an MVP vote. I got to go back and look and see if you were the one who gave him that MVP vote. I'm betting you were. But seriously, in 2005, an all-star in 6 years with Cleveland, so half of that time, you know, he was pretty solid. 2.47 ERA and 45 saves that year for Cleveland. So Bob Wickman, a guy who had the surgery and came back.
Yeah, he still ranks second in saves all time in the franchise with 139 saves as Cleveland's closer. You know, so he was a dominant closer when healthy. He was an interesting guy, Joe. He invented the intentional balk one night in at the Metrodome in playing the Twins. He had a guy on second base, like in the ninth inning, and he thought that he was stealing signs and flashing them to the hitter. So Bob intentionally balked the guy to third base so he couldn't see the signs. Then got out of the inning.
Well, little did he know 20 years later that the Astros would be doing the same thing and not just stealing the signs, but the Astros were the ones, I believe, who were balking guys to third base on purpose because they were worried about their signs being stolen. So, yeah, just interesting facts about Bob Wickman. So those are our, you know, our top five Cleveland pitchers who came back and found success after Tommy John surgery with the Cleveland's organization. You kind of hope that this serves to be some sort of inspiration or encouragement to Shane Bieber as he gets ready to begin this long road back. Surgery could be scheduled by the end of this week. We might know where and when he's going under the knife, probably in Dallas with Dr. Meister. So again, you know, this is it's a significant loss for the Guardians, felt throughout the organization. But Shane Bieber has a lot of hope based on some of these numbers and some of these names.
Yeah, and it's a surgery that, you know, people have come back from. You know, the majority of pitchers that have undergone ligament replacement surgery have come back and have pitched again, you know, at the big league level. But they're, you know, they're like any surgery, there are risks, and you know, I'm sure Bieber will have to deal with those as well.
I you know, the reconstructive elbow surgery, it was pioneered, you know, and it has been a part of sports health, sports medicine for so many years. It spawned the ACL surgery, was sort of based off of this elbow reconstructive surgery. And I, you know, I've had reconstructive knee surgery that's basically the same thing on a different kind of joint. One thing I remember, it sparked in my memory when you said that about who was it, Tom Candiotti going under the knife and the doctor talking to him right before he went under. I remember the doctor, as I'm laying on the table, asking me which leg I was having the surgery on, like to double confirm, and then drawing an X on my leg that I was having the operation on to say, cut this one. You know, at the moment I was kind of alarmed by that. I was like, how many guys have you cut into that you cut the wrong leg open? And it just, it, it one is too many, and you wind up with a Sharpie all over your limb when something like that happens. So anyways, that's my only that's the only thing I can relate myself to any of these surgery stories. Hoynesy, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll be back at it tomorrow, and we'll talk to you then.
All right, Joe.